from deep inside your radio.
From the Rose City, ladies and gentlemen, from Portland, Oregon, where my friends and I helped to curse the Portland Trailblazers to their worst home playoff defeat in history last night. Maybe you saw it on ESPN. I think we looked good on ESPN. Anyway, the first date in the Unwigged Tour is over from Vancouver, British Columbia, where I discovered, you know, because I'm a kind of a radio nut, I discovered that although this was tried in Los Angeles, which you would think would be the absolute target market for this format, and it did not work at all. It is apparently thriving in Vancouver. All traffic radio. I know. It's so Canadian. All traffic radio. I don't know what the all-night guy does, but that's what the format. I didn't hear it. I just saw it being advertised on television, but all traffic radio in Vancouver. Speaking of radio, I mean, the broadcast is originating today from a full-fledged actual radio station here in Portland, Oregon. A radio station where my wife Judith and I were visiting a few years ago. She was performing here. We were promoting the gig. We were visiting the afternoon guys, Court and Boomer. Now, you know, in commercial radio, it's always somebody has to have a goofy nickname. So it was Court. That was the real name. And Boomer. Court was the kind of the 30-ish radio guy. He, you know, twiddled the knobs and everything. There are no knobs anymore, but you know what I mean. And Boomer, who was kind of a chubby 24-year-old guy with one of these voices and supposed to be funny. It was their first day as afternoon DJs. They had just been moved from the evening, and the guy who had been on the afternoon was fired. So every time they, you know, and it's commercial radio, they go to the phones. And every time Court hits the button to open a phone line, all you hear is, "You suck! You suck!" Over and over and over again. So they're a little embarrassed. Anyway, we do the interview. We're driving, being driven back to the hotel in the radio station's yellow Hummer. That's right. I'm speaking to you from a radio station that, at least a couple years ago, owned a yellow Hummer to go around town and say, "Hey, look at us." And I said to the guy driving us back to the hotel, "You know, that kid seems a little young to be called Boomer." He said, "Oh, no, that's not how he got his name." "Really?" "No, he, when he was in fourth grade, the anti-drug cop, you know, the DARE cop, came to school one day to visit his class. And he brought, you know, just to keep the kids entertained, he brought his pet pig, Boomer." That's right, the guy was named after the DARE cop's pet pig. Ladies and gentlemen, that happened right here in this very studio. Ladies and gentlemen, the good news about the economy. The Army last month stopped accepting felons and recent drug abusers into its ranks because the nation's economic downturn has helped recruiting. That allows the Army to reverse a decline in recruiting standards that had alarmed some officers. See? It's the good news about the economy. While shunning those with criminal backgrounds, the Army is also attracting better educated recruits. It's on track for the first time since 2004 to meet the goal of ensuring that 90% of recruits have high school diplomas and the other 10% are officers. No, it doesn't say that. Sorry. These developments mark a welcome turnaround for the Army, which has the military's biggest annual recruiting quotas and has recently issued more waivers for recruits with criminal records. That had led some senior officers to voice concerns that wartime pressures threatened to break the all-volunteer force. Now, though, rising unemployment and other factors have helped make military service more attractive. So, all of you kids recently lost jobs in the media, you can become press officers in Afghanistan. And on the subject of nuclear waste, which you know is a favorite subject of mine, because I'm not storing any in my house. I don't know about you. A company is signaling its intent to turn a rural Texas county near the New Mexico state line into the home of the only dump in the United States capable of disposing of all classes of low-level radioactive waste from around the country. South Carolina has shut its doors to nearly all of the nation's low-level radioactive waste in July, leaving 36 states with no place to get rid of waste from nuclear power plants, hospitals, universities, and research labs. So Dallas-based waste control specialists has gotten a license to begin accepting Department of Energy waste from around the country and commercial waste from Texas and Vermont at its facility. Now the company wants to dispose of commercial waste from other states besides Texas and Vermont. We believe flexible import provisions would go very far towards solving the nation's challenges, says William Dornsleif, the company's executive vice president. The material is there. It needs to be moved to a secure licensed facility, and we believe our site can provide that need, said the company spokesman. Since the 1980s, the federal... It's just low level. This is not the waste from nuclear power plants that you're going to have to store for zillions of years. This is just, you know, what's used for the hospital test. Certain waste from nuclear power plants, but not the real stuff. Since the 1980s, the federal government has urged states to build low-level nuclear waste landfills, either on their own or in cooperation with other states. Only one has opened in the last 30 years in Utah, owned by Energy Solutions. Yes, the basketball arena in Salt Lake City is named after the company that owns the nuclear waste dump. Your problem with that? It is only allowed to accept Class A waste, which is considered the least hazardous. That's the one in Utah. That has left the more dangerous B and C waste in dozens of states stored on site, that is to say at the hospital or at the nuclear plant that generated the waste, leading to fears that some of the material would be lost or stolen by terrorists and turned into dirty bombs. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is considering allowing Class B and C waste to be disposed of by being diluted first so it could be reclassified as Class A. It's the same way that subprime mortgages were rated AAA. They were diluted. Diluted. We were diluted. It was diluted. Waste control specialists, by the way, the company that owns the dump in Texas, is a subsidiary of a Delaware-based company whose primary stockholder, Harold Simmons, is a top donor to Texas Republican Governor Rick Perry, who this week said he wants the state to consider seceding, in which case it could be your favorite nuclear waste dump country. Hello, welcome to the show.
Look at this one, look at that one. Demi, do they look like me? All my friends said, don't you worry.
From the Pacific Northwest, from Portland, Oregon, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And whatever happens, whatever else happens on this tour that I'm on with my friend, for information, go to unwigged.com. It's going to be hard to top what happened a week ago when we were doing our first day of final rehearsals, you know, in the big, big facility where all the rock bands go to do their big rehearsals before their big shows. And we're just setting up and getting our sound, just trying to figure out how to hear ourselves, really. That basic. And all of a sudden, a guy walks in who's we'd heard rehearsing next door. And in fact, he was. And strolls in, just pops his head in. Paul McCartney. And other people who were there said, I've never seen you three guys that speechless before. And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the commercial production business or in the advertising business and you're trying to devise one of those commercials for that airline that where people are just like, got to get away, or better yet, for, you know, a stress test for your antiperspirant kind of commercial, nothing will beat standing there with instruments about 20 minutes into trying to figure out how to hear yourself, and all of a sudden Paul McCartney walks in and says, oh, give us a tune, fellas. And we did. And I think the puddles of beneath us have drained by now. But now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for...
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland.
News of the digital wonderland.
Got to be so careful where you stand. In the digital wonderland.
First, a listener letter. Dear Harry, since purchasing a converter box in March, good on you, mate. I have been compiling a mental list of my top 50 least favorite aspects of the new setup. However, when I heard the following story, I figured it said it all. My friend noticed that his new converter box's reception became progressively worse the longer the unit was on. Upon further inspection, the box was found to be getting very warm. As the picture and sound continued to break up more and more. As a result, my friend is now taken to placing ice packs both over and under the unit whenever he wants to watch TV for any length of time. He reports some success using this technique. With some 2 months to go until the new deadline, any bets? The digital transition continues across America, says Media Daily News. At present, there are now 3.6 million people, or 3.2% of U.S. television households, that are completely unprepared for the digital transition. Just for contrast, the most generous estimates of the number of people involved in the tea parties this week, nationwide, 700,000. This is 3.2 million people who aren't going to get any TV in June. I don't think it's tea bags they're going to be throwing. According to the Nielsen ratings, there's been a 2% improvement in households as of April 12th from March 29th, and a 4% gain since March 15th. This gain in people who are somehow ready for the digital transition, or at least say they are. Demographically, the biggest percentage of homes that are unprepared are African-American homes at 5.9%, Hispanic-Americans 5.4%, Asian TV homes at 4.3%, white households 2.5%. The deadline for the switch is fast approaching. It has some Colorado residents turning to their computers in lieu of dealing with their television conversions. A Fort Collins resident found her indoor antenna couldn't pick up NBC or ABC, even though the resident lives in the city limits of Fort Collins. She's a fan of the show Lost. She called the network. She said no one could help her. They seemed a bit surprised based on my location. She said she was advised to buy a new outdoor antenna. With the down economy, she said that isn't an option for her. Says, I'm hoping to watch those shows by computer. I'm not getting cable. The option of watching TV online is growing. So maybe that will be the real digital transition, although the networks are now trying to roll back their earlier decision to put shows online for free because too many people are watching for free and they can't get enough money for their commercials yet. Yet. Anyway, that is news from the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. Just one of the many copyrighted features of this broadcast. And now, because I'm traveling so much, I'm getting more tales of airport security. No, it's a nutty coincidence. Or just karma. There's Paul on bass right now. And Greg writes, Dear Harry, my father-in-law was a World War II veteran. In his memory, my wife carried a spent shell casing from the 21-gun salute that was performed at his funeral. Spent meaning it's an empty brass tube. On a recent flight, airport security confiscated the spent shell casing. She didn't have any bullet reloading equipment with her. We were lucky because a Delta Airlines employee offered to hold the brass tube until I could leave work to pick it up. Thanks, Delta, and thank you to TSA. America saved from a brass tube, ladies and gentlemen, an empty brass tube. I know it seems silly, but it's probably, you know, something really important, really, really crucial that they found or thought they found that they were saving us from. There's so much of that going around. But it's not just the Army that has good news to share with us about the economy today, ladies and gentlemen. And so it is time for me to read the trades for you. You'll see what I mean moments from now. From Advertising Age, Worth magazine relaunches as an even more exclusive title for the ultra rich. I will read it for you. It's one of the things I do. Dateline New York, it's always been about wealth and prestige for the magazine Worth, which has catered to the ultra-affluent since 1992. A casual flip through its most recent issue revealed, for example, the inside scoop on affordable art starting at $50,000 and private aircraft. Now's the best time to buy since 1990. But the magazine is about to be more exclusive than ever. Soon it will have a $20 cover price. Unless you're on the magazine's elite addressee list. Beginning this May, Worth will be relaunched as a bi-monthly magazine, a smaller, higher quality version with thicker paper, more photography. It will go out for free in a sealed envelope to 110,000 carefully selected high net worth individuals. That's right, if you're rich enough, you get it for free. Unlike the Wi-Fi at Ritz-Carlton's. We wanted to completely change the look and feel of the magazine to cater to high net worth individuals, says publisher Patrick Williams. To qualify for the free magazine, a household has to have a minimum net worth of $2 million. Have at least $1 million of equity in their main residence, and live in one of 11 major markets, including New York, Boston, and San Francisco. Two of those are cities this broadcast isn't heard in, so you guys are on your own. Worth looked at roughly 550,000 eligible households, about 50,000 in each of those cities. The magazine then whittled down that list to 110,000 across the country based on address exclusivity. Current subscribers who do not qualify will receive the magazine until their subscriptions expire, but will not be able to renew. Though they can shell out the $20 to pick it up on newsstands. Publisher Williams says Worth will be the highest priced magazine on newsstands. And he acknowledges that the price tag is more for publicity than anything else. As bizarrely timed as the relaunch may feel in this economy, Worth sees its content as more relevant than ever, given that wealthy people are panicky about their investments in a shaky post-Madoff world. Worth has partnered with Paladin Registry, information services company, to ensure that wealth advisors that advertise in the magazine are top performers. This is something no one has ever done before, Williams said, of the commercial relationship with wealth advisors. The magazine's commercial distribution will be limited. They secured exclusivity in 150 of the top operators that service private jets, where Worth will be available for free, along with other titles from the same publisher, including Lux, New Beauty, and Watch Journal. Certainly, says Advertising Age, Worth faces an uphill challenge. Its average paid subscription circulation was only 31,000 in the last 6 months of last year, down more than 50% from the same period in 2007. The magazine's website will launch in May with select content behind a password-protected wall. But you can get the password for free if you make more than 2 million. Yes, everybody's struggling but the army in this economy, even though there are glimmers of hope. That should be a gospel quartet if it's not already the glimmers of hope. Anyway, that's neither here nor there when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Came with bitter disappointment. just lambing the lion's den. It should be precarious was her not meant. And sister sweet and daddy dear had that kind of spark that makes you weary. And so she said, and I love you, Len. Hopes grew small and her optimism bleary. And they all said, wow. They all said, what a shame. You're so different. Who's to blame? She said, why don't you let me just shine my own way? Why don't you let me just shine my own damn way? Just let me shine. She grew, she ran away, far from shadowlands and suffocation, to a normal life and normal friends. And she never ever spoke about her shiny fine relations, just in case they all said, wow. They all said, what a shame. You're so different. Who's to blame? She said, why don't you let me just shine my own way? Why don't you let me just shine my own damn way? Let me shine.
This is Le Show, and welcoming back to the Portland Le Show Dome today, an old friend of the broadcast, who's looking a little spiffed up, Ralph the Talking Computer. Hi, Ralph. Welcome back.
Thanks, Harry. I guess you've run out of bush jokes, and so you need me again.
Well, it's not so much need, it's just like, Ralph. As I mentioned in the introduction, you look a little spiffed up. What have you been up to lately?
Well, thanks for pretending to appear interested.
Aww.
I've had a few updates to my operating system.
Excellent.
So I'm faster than ever.
Wow.
If you don't believe me, You can ask some of the female computers around here.
Indeed. Well, that's interesting from a personal standpoint, Ralph. What have you been up to professionally?
What have I been doing since getting almost no exposure to the business through this show?
Well, yeah.
Gee, let me see. Mm-hmm. The last time Stephen Hawking was a guest on The Simpsons,
yeah,
he had a speaking engagement conflict.
Really?
So I looped his part.
Ah.
That was good for what they called at Fox, computer scale.
What does that amount to?
Couple of chips.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So, Ralph, what...
Corn. Chips.
Oh, got it. So, what brings you to the show today, Ralph?
Well, Harry, in a way, it's a return to my roots.
Really?
Although, of course, as a computer, I don't have any roots.
Okay.
So I'm just using a human cliche.
Well, we appreciate that.
But do you remember my very early appearances on your so-called show?
Yes, I do, Ralph. You were reading the King's Things column from USA Today by Larry King.
That is correct, sir.
Thank you.
Well, this week, Larry King revived his column in a very 21st century setting.
Really?
He's now on Twitter.
Twitter.
His first several tweets contained a lovely selection of King's Things.
Wow.
I'd like to share them with you today.
We'd like you to share them with us today.
Making fun of my timing?
Well,
for $500, I can have that upgraded.
I don't think that's necessary, Ralph. Your timing is fabulous. Share with us some of King's Things from Larry King's new site on Twitter.
Some music, please, Harry.
Of course.
Does anyone play Pinnacle anymore? The one business that always has to do well in this economy is the funeral parlor. Baseball is back, so the world is good again. I love all sports, but baseball is still our only national pastime. In office buildings, why do they lock bathrooms? What would you steal from a bathroom? Is Krispy Kreme still popular?
Beautifully read by Ralph the Talking Computer from Larry King's Things on Twitter.
Nice reverb. Harry, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
And did you notice that Larry refers to baseball as a pastime?
Pastime.
Either that's a neologism, or someone else needs an operating system upgrade.
that's cute, Rob, but it's great to have you and your attitude back on the show, and we look forward to more readings of King's Things from Twitter in the future, and good luck with whatever else you got going.
I got nothing else. Thanks.
Thank you. Ralph the Talking Computer here today on the show.
Everybody's talking about a chicken. A chicken is a popular bird. Anywhere you go, you're bound to find that a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Some people call it a fowl. That's the story I've heard. Anywhere you go, you're bound to find that a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. You can boil it, you can broil it, cook it in a pan or a pot. Eat it with potatoes, rice, or tomatoes, a chicken's still what you got. Boy, it was a dish for old Caesar, even King Henry III. Old Columbus was smart, said you can't fool me, because a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Thank you. word. You can boil it, you can boil it, cook it in a pan or a pot. Eat it with potatoes, rice, or tomatoes, the chicken is still what you got. Boy, it was a dish for old Caesar, even King Henry III. Old Columbus was smart, he said, you can't fool me, because a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. I like fried chicken, stewed chicken, baked chicken, creamed chicken, fricassee chicken, barbecue chicken, boiled chicken, or broiled chicken. Now, B-I-R-D, what does it spell? And what does it mean? That C-H-I-C-K-E-N ain't nothing but a B-I-R-D.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Here's Paul.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Beijing. China's official media and outspoken bloggers on Friday protested over a German advertisement promoting the use of condoms, which shows revolutionary leader Mao Zedong as a sperm cell alongside Adolf Hitler and Osama bin Laden. The People's Daily newspaper devoted a page to the storm, quoting internet commentaries which called for the makers of the advertisement to apologize to China. And, in fact, advertising agency Gray Worldwide, advertising agency called Gray, which made the advertisement for Doc Morris Pharmacies, sent a letter of apology to the Chinese consulate in Frankfurt, Germany. Cycling champ Tyler Hamilton admitted this week that he has tested positive for a banned substance. Hamilton, who won the 2004 gold medal in cycling in the Olympics, announced his retirement from the sport. He served a two-year ban after testing positive for blood doping in 2004, but now he says he knowingly took DHEA to battle his depression. He said he took the over-the-counter dietary supplement before the Tour of California in February to fight his clinical depression, which he was diagnosed with in 2003. DHEA is on the World Anti-Doping Agency's banned list. The supplement converts to a steroid once it hits the bloodstream. Was it stupid? Absolutely, yes. Was I wrong? Absolutely, yes, Hamilton says. But the people who suffer from depression know that sometimes you make drastic decisions to make yourself feel better. Did I take it for performance enhancement? Absolutely not, he says. If he's found guilty a second time of using a banned substance, Hamilton faces at least an 8-year ban or a lifetime ban. He apologized for using DHEA, but said he's moving forward and concentrating on battling his depression. Fast food apologies, ladies and gentlemen. For your listening pleasure, Dateline Mexico City fast food giant Burger King apologized this week for an advertisement featuring a squat Mexican draped in his country's flag next to a tall American cowboy. Said it would change the campaign. Mexico's ambassador to Spain said posters released in Europe for Burger King's new Texican Whopper, a cheeseburger with chili and spicy mayonnaise, inappropriately displayed the Mexican flag, whose image is protected under Mexican national law. Yeah, but that's Mexican law. The ambassador wrote a letter complaining to Burger King and requested the ad campaign be discontinued. Burger King said the ads were meant to show a mixture of influences from the southwestern United States and Mexico, not to poke fun at Mexican culture, but said it would replace them as soon as commercially possible. Burger King Corporation, it said in a statement, has made the decision to revise the Texican Whopper advertising creative out of respect for the Mexican culture and its people. The company added, the existing campaign falls fully within the legal parameters of the United Kingdom and Spain, and we're not intended to offend anybody. The pint-sized Mexican wrestler was nicknamed Just a Little Bit. At one point, the American lifts up the Mexican to help him put a trophy on a high shelf. And Domino's Pizza, in its continuing effort to put out the public relations fires ignited by a disturbing YouTube video made by two employees showing one of them doing several disgusting things and preparing food for putative delivery to Domino's customers. Domino's has fired back with a YouTube video of its own. In it, Patrick Doyle, president of Domino's USA, apologizes for the incident and describes the steps his company is taking to ensure such an incident doesn't happen again. We sincerely apologize for this incident, Doyle said. We thank members of the online community who quickly alerted us. That is to say, they put the country's attention on the YouTube video in the first place, which got almost more hits than Susan Boyle, and allowed us to take immediate action. Although the individuals in question claim it's a hoax, we are taking this incredibly seriously. He added that the store in Conover, North Carolina, where the videos were shot, has been shut down and is being sanitized from top to bottom. The company is also conducting a wholesale review of hiring practices to make sure that people like this don't make it into our stores. It sickens me that the actions of two individuals could impact our great system, he said. Meanwhile, the disgusting Domino's video in question is currently unavailable on YouTube due to a copyright claim from Christy Hammonds, one of the employees in the video. It had received nearly a million hits by Wednesday afternoon. That's right. She made the video, posted it to YouTube, then gave them a copyright claim to force it to be taken down. Perhaps in fear that she would never work again in the United States? Perhaps not. Allegiant Air announced this week, or the last couple of weeks, it will end its scheduled airplane service between Bellingham, Washington, and Reno, Nevada. Maurice Gallagher, president, CEO, and chairman for Allegiant Air. That's right, he's all three. That's how small it is. Announced, unfortunately, due to lack of market demand, we will end our service between Reno and Bellingham. We apologize for any inconvenience this may cause our customers. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano apologized this week after some veterans groups were offended by a department report about right-wing extremism. The report said extremist groups may try to attract veterans returning from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It also said extremists may use the recession and the election of the nation's first African-American president to recruit members. The American Legion was among those who objected to the report's mention of veterans. I think it's important for all of us to remember Americans are not the enemy, the terrorists are, said the American Legion's national commander in a letter to Napolitano. That's right, and Americans aren't terrorists, ever. Is that what you're saying, sir? Napolitano apologized on CNN on Thursday morning. I know that some veterans groups were offended by the fact that veterans were mentioned in this assessment, so I apologize for that offense. It was certainly not intended. She said the report was an assessment, not an accusation, and she would meet with leaders of veterans groups in the coming week. Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York City apologized to a wheelchair-bound reporter on Friday, the day after he chastised the reporter when his tape recorder went off during a news conference, bringing the event to a two-minute halt. The incident happened when freelance reporter Michael Harris' tape recorder started playing in the middle of a marriage equality press briefing. Bloomberg said, "Something's playing. Can we just stop this and we'll start again?" The city council speaker, Christine Quinn, whispered to Bloomberg, "He's disabled." Bloomberg, "I understand that. He can still turn it off. This is a little too important for playing music. Let me start again as soon as we can do this." The mayor has now apologized. The mayor came over to me and said he felt what happened was disruptive, that he's always made every effort to accommodate me, that he respects my work, said the disabled reporter. He said he thinks I'm an excellent reporter, that he would have done what he did to any reporter who'd been in that situation. He apologized if in any way I took offense. Harris is also a disability rights activist, said he accepted the mayor's apology, and it's time to move on. The mishap occurred when a photographer accidentally knocked over his coat, which had his tape recorder in his pocket. When the coat hit the floor, the recorder clicked on and began playing a tape of Newt Gingrich addressing a crowd. It took Harris more than a minute to reach the recorder and switch it off. So Newt Gingrich talking is music to Mayor Bloomberg's ears. Canada's chief of defense staff apologized this week after the military decided that the plane carrying the body of the latest Canadian soldier slain in Afghanistan would stop in Ottawa first to drop off other soldiers who were returning home. "I want to offer my sincerest apologies to anyone who may have been offended by the decision to return troops to Ottawa prior to the final repatriation of our fallen comrade, Trooper Karin Blace," said General Walt Natiznik in a statement. "I can assure all Canadians that our goal is to treat all fallen soldiers with respect, dignity, and honor, and it is our intention to continue to ensure this policy is followed." About 117 soldiers got off the plane in Ottawa before the plane carrying the casket of Blaze went on to Canadian Air Force's base in Trenton. About 100 supporters were gathered there for the repatriation ceremony. Blaise was the second female Canadian soldier to die in Afghanistan, just 2 weeks into her first tour of duty in Afghanistan. The decision to stop in Ottawa was apparently a logistical decision so the returning soldiers would not have to land in Trenton and then make a three-hour trip back to Ottawa, where they would be transported to their homes. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, University of North Carolina officials have apologized to former U.S. Congressman Tom Tancredo, Republican of Colorado, whose speech on campus was disrupted by protesters. Chancellor Holden Thorpe and System President Erskine Bowles, remember him from the Clinton administration, both telephoned Tancredo to apologize. Protesters objecting to Tancredo's views on immigration shouted as he tried to give a speech. Students smashed a window a few feet from where he stood and blocked his face with a banner that said, "No one is illegal." The event was cut short due to broken glass and the use of pepper spray by police. The local chapter of Youth for Western Civilization, that's a first, sponsored the talk, paid Tancredo $3,000 for the appearance. The group has called on the university to invite Tancredo back to the campus on the school's dime. Hey, at those prices, I'll invite him back. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Yes, I guess that qualifies me for a free copy of Worth. And now, news from outside the bubble. From the Sydney Morning Herald in Sydney, Australia, comes the latest on our friend Pakistan. Pakistan could collapse within months. That's according to one of the more influential counterinsurgency voices in Washington. The warning comes as the U.S. scrambles to redeploy its military forces and diplomats in an effort to stem the rising violence and anarchy in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We have to face the fact that if Pakistan collapses, it will dwarf anything we have seen so far in whatever we're calling the war on terror now, says David Kilcullen, a former Australian Army officer who was a specialist advisor for the Bush administration and is now a consultant to the Obama White House. "You just can't say you're not going to worry about Al-Qaeda taking control of Pakistan and its nukes," he says. Dr. Kilcullen says time is running out for international efforts to pull both Afghanistan and Pakistan back from the brink. When he unveiled his new AFA policy in Washington, President Obama warned that while Al-Qaeda would fill the vacuum if Afghanistan collapsed, the terrorist group was already rooted in Pakistan. Pakistan has 173 million people and 100 nuclear weapons, says Kilcullen, an army which is bigger than the American army, and the headquarters of Al-Qaeda sitting in two-thirds of the country, which the government does not control. Added to that, the Pakistani security establishment ignored direction from the elected government in Islamabad as waves of extremist violence spread across the whole country, not just in the tribal regions. Cautioning against an excessive focus by Western governments on Afghanistan at the expense of Pakistan, like we did when we concentrated on Iraq at the expense of Pakistan, Dr. Kilcullen said that the Kabul tail was wagging the dog. Comparing the challenges in the two, he said Afghanistan was a campaign to defend a reconstruction program. It's not really about Al-Qaeda. Afghanistan doesn't worry me. Pakistan does. End quote. Dr. Kilcullen said a fault line had developed in the West's grasp of circumstances on each side of the line between Afghanistan and Pakistan. In Afghanistan, it's easy to understand, difficult to execute. In Pakistan, it's very difficult to understand, and it's extremely difficult for us to generate any leverage because Pakistan does not want our help. In a sense, he says, there is no Pakistan. No single set of opinion. Pakistan has a military and intelligence establishment that refuses to follow the directions of its civilian leadership. They have a tradition of using regional extremist groups as unconventional counterweights against India. You can't have Al-Qaeda in control of Pakistan's missiles, he says, which would happen if Pakistan collapsed and Al-Qaeda would end up running what he calls Talibanistan. It's too early to tell which way it will go. We'll start to know about July. That's the peak fighting season. And a month before the Afghan presidential election, so says David Kilcullen, who was the guy that advised General Petraeus on counterinsurgency. What does he know? From the McClatchy newspapers, Dateline Washington, the Justice Department improperly withheld important psychiatric records of a government witness who was used in a significant number of Guantanamo cases. That's the ruling of a federal judge. The government censored parts of the record, but enough has been made public, this is from McClatchy newspapers, that it's clear the witness, a fellow detainee, was being treated weekly for a serious psychological problem and was questioned about whether he had any suicidal thoughts. The witness provided information in the government's case against a Yemeni doctor who the government has now announced it will no longer seek to detain. And the judge found the witness's testimony in other cases could be challenged as unreliable. He castigated government for not turning over the medical records and ordered Justice Department lawyers to explain why he shouldn't cite them for contempt of court. How can this court have any confidence whatsoever in the United States government to comply with its obligations and to be truthful to the court? He asked. He also criticized the government for deciding at the last minute to drop the case against the Yemeni doctor, held at Guantanamo for 7 years, and questioned its motives for doing so. He suggested the government's announced plans to seek a country that would take the doctor were really just a scheme to continue to detain him without due process. He ordered the Justice Department to notify other judges of the psychiatric records of the witness so they could assess whether the government's failure to reveal the extent of the witness's mental problems may have bearing on other detainee cases. The witness, apparently, according to court records, had an antisocial personality disorder. The diagnosis could mean the person is lying and lacks regard for the difference between right or wrong. And the torture memos became public this week, more of them. According to them, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded 183 times in March of 2003. Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded 83 times in August 2002. The information comes from the Inspector General's report at the CIA. The Inspector General apparently viewed the videotapes of the waterboarding. According to the Justice Department memo that said this was all cool, where authorized, waterboarding may be used for two, quote, sessions, per, unquote, per day of up to 2 hours. During a session, water may be applied up to six times for 10 seconds or longer, but never more than 40 seconds. In a 24-hour period, a detainee may be subjected to up to 12 minutes of water application. Additionally, the waterboard may be used on as many as 5 days during a 30-day period. That's what the lawyers wrote. The New York Times quotes the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, who was not pleased by the release of the torture memos. These methods, read on a bright, sunny, safe April day in 2009, appear graphic and disturbing, he said in a written statement. But we will absolutely defend those who relied on those memos. In a footnote to the 2005 memo, it was made clear that the rules were not always followed, as the rules I just specified for how often somebody should be waterboarded. It was often used with far greater frequency than initially indicated and with large volumes of water rather than the small quantities in the rules. And then we get to what I think is possibly one of the keys to all of this, why all the former intelligence chiefs are saying it's making us less safe that these memos were released. The International Committee of the Red Cross issued a report on all of this, chronicled accounts by 14 detainees of their treatment at the hands of the CIA officers between 2002 and 2006. Those accounts from detainees closely match the techniques outlined in the memos released. In other words, we used to say that you couldn't believe what the detainees said because they're trained by Al-Qaeda to make all this stuff up. Now that the memos are out, we know what the detainees were saying was true.
Well, it may not be legal, but it sure as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. But it's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives go air. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go. You can't get off if you want to. And it's really hard work, but for us it feels much more like play. If the tables were turned, we'd feel really burned. But let's go water.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to stuff the water-soaked cloth in the mouth of this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, available as a free podcast to members at www.audible.com, available